Welcome to the official Leverage Redemption After Show, a very distinctive podcast. I'm Yael Teagle.
And I'm Felicia Michelle.
And we are discussing season one, episode 11, The Jackal Job. I'm so excited.
Me too, cheerio, so excited. Like, you know, thinking about like fish and chips and whatever, like that, right?
Exactly.
Terrible. That was horrible.
Exactly.
Sorry, Gina.
We are going to talk to quite a few stars from the show. As always, we have games and bingo and, of course, Easter eggs. But first, let's head into the studio and discuss this episode.
Hip, hip, hooray.
I'm so excited. Felicia, what did you think of this episode?
Girl power, groovy. Yeah, that's... I liked it.
Okay, liked it a lot. I wasn't sure.
I like a lot.
I see.
Sorry, Gina.
This episode was quite British, I guess.
It was. You had, you know, timepiece. You had a whole, you know, a different country, different vibe. I liked it. I loved it.
Yeah. What did you think about this flashback with our characters in roles, which is a thing that we've seen before on the original series?
For this episode, it made like 100% like sense, because when Sophie sees her, she realizes. Oh my gosh, like, you're the jackal. You're like the goat. It's like meeting, you know, oh, you beat me to stealing that painting. Like, it's you. You know, it's this fan admiration that she has for her. So then just watching her step into that role and playing her in the flashback, it made perfect sense.
Yeah, I actually really love that we have this story of a different grifter, a different generation of grift, like someone who our team or people in our team can look up to.
OG, the original grifter.
I love it. I loved this. And the character of Stella was so interesting because, you know, as we see her, she's dealing with memory loss. And hearing Sophie talk about how, as a grifter, your skill set is your mind, is your wits. That must be so challenging. And, you know, memory loss is challenging for anyone. But when that's what you do, when your memory and your mind is what you have to use, it's, I think, what an interesting story to tell.
I mean, imagine meeting your hero and then realizing that they don't even know what makes them so heroic to you. I mean, she wasn't all, you know, she was there. There were bits and pieces, but she really needed to connect those things to make sense of it all. And it just started off like, is this a sneaky old lady? Like, how is she? When she stole Brianna's phone, I was like, hold on.
It's like little jalapeno poppers, it looks like, and then there's like some strawberries and some apples.
Just go on through. My back is not very good these days.
There's something else to this. It was very I care-esque, you know, in the these caregivers taking advantage of people, older people, after they've been deemed incompetent to take care of themselves, which, you know, I'm sure that happens.
I am perfectly fine on my own.
And who left the stove on?
You're gonna hurt yourself.
A judge awarded me control of your care and possessions precisely for this reason. Keep you safe.
Oh, the story of conservatorship and what is going on in that field right now is so timely. You know, we see it with the Free Britney movement, and it was done in such a leverage way that it was a timely topic with a con artist, with a flashback. Like, this is a leverage. There's a leverage episode.
Why are you selling my things?
I went over this before, remember?
Yes, I remember, but you came barging in here and I've got flustered.
It's natural for someone in your condition to be confused. That's why I hired your full-time nurse, Antonio. He starts today. And what I sew will cover his fee.
Obviously, a same-sex couple at that time.
Right.
It kind of broke my heart when they had, like, the scene where they, you know, they had a commitment ceremony, which is, like, that's not fair. A commitment ceremony in their house. And it's like, wow, you get to see all this love. And it doesn't even really dawn on you sometimes that people really weren't able to fully love and be with who they love and have all the rights and privileges of that until very recently.
Yeah, very recently.
Very recently.
Right.
So that wasn't lost on me watching this episode.
Yeah, I think, you know, what is so beautiful is we see a love story, which I feel like all of the flashback episodes have been love stories.
Nothing wrong with love.
Yeah.
Love.
I really enjoyed getting to see Gina Bellman in a bigger character in a flashback, because I feel like in previous experience, she has not been such a focal point of the episode. And this was her.
And this is kind of her, a bit of a take of her love story, too.
Yeah.
Falling in love with the Mark. You're not supposed to do that.
Right.
And anyway, if anyone knows, she knows. So even finding out that her hero, Grifter, she's getting meat, is in this horrible situation that's very much so impossible for her to get out of because she's missing pieces of her memory. Not only that, but wow, we have you share this kind of love story that I've shared. I know what this is like. My favorite part, one of my favorite parts besides the car, is wanting a cup of Joe.
Yeah, she does want a cup with Joe.
Like, is it a cup of Joe? What's she saying? Coffee? Like, what's going on here? It's like, no, Joe. Joe's person. Joe is her person.
I think that would take someone unexpected. Josephine. Stella said she'd love to have a cup with Joe. She didn't fall for the gangster. She fell in love with his wife. Joe signed Stella's power of attorney.
I really, I love that twist. And I think that it was so well done in that up until that moment, every reference to her love used non-gendered pronouns, which is such an interesting way to make sure that we understand where we're going.
Or really, you just kind of, most people probably just made an assumption that that's her love. Like,
and Sophie made an assumption. And luckily, Brianna was there to...
I was like,
point out. She was like, no.
think you're missing something there.
Right. I really enjoyed that. And I love the way the whole team, you know, we stumbled upon this case and the whole team got involved.
Because Brianna needed to do her community service. Like, she's like, doing Meals on Wheels. And she's like, look, that old lady just got you for your phone. You didn't even realize
it. Yeah.
The lift was a oldie but a goodie.
Right. I will say, when they got to use Stella later and she, you know, she continued to help them with the con, I loved that.
It was, she like, well, where's this prized pistol at? Where is it at?
Yeah. What did you think about the fact that she didn't have any of her, she like, aside from the pistol, none of the other things were really there. She had pictures of her catches. You know what I mean? It's like when people who fish, they have the pictures of themselves holding the fish.
Oh, holding up big old fish.
Yeah. My fish is this big. You point out that usually they're...
Well, if you're taking a picture, like, at least be able to like, hold it up. Like, you know?
I don't know fish. I think it was really amazing that she had the pictures of it rather than the item itself, because the item didn't matter.
We know the reason that our team's able to do what they do is because it's the thrill of it. It's not necessarily the thing.
Right.
It's the why Parker likes to get an event. It just gets her going. It gets her juices flowing.
Unless it's cash, then she's really happy to
take it. Yeah, no, she's really excited to cash. But that's not necessarily all that it is for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's so interesting that we have another grifter who also it's not about... Or at some point, I guess it stopped being about that.
Okay, writers, hold on. See what you're doing here. You're showing us, because we have some throwback, because we had, you know, Throwback Spy in the mid-season premiere. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you're showing, like, hold on. People had lives, and people have been doing this for years and for decades.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
I see. I like that whole, like, there's no ageism. Mm-hmm. You know, they can still fight, and they can still lift.
Yeah.
They still can be a part of the con.
Nice. I love the twist at the end. Let's talk about this last interaction with our judge. What did you think about this handoff lift fake gun situation?
It's what we watch the show for. It's literally like what you see. I always say, like, don't trust your sight. Don't trust your sight, but like trust your vision. And the team has a vision of what they're going to get done, but by sight it looks totally different. You know, we watch like, how did that happen? Like, wait a minute, it's just so swift. It's just very much why we watch the show, for those moments when we're like, hold on, how did you do that?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. one thing I thought was really funny is the conservator who's calling the judge and saying, you better not look all this up before me. Oh, no, I'm not looking through it at all. No, not me. Greedy people will always be greedy, even with other people. I don't know why criminals link up with other criminals. Right. Why do you trust them?
I mean, what we've learned from our team is that sometimes you can trust them, but like bad guys are bad guys. You know?
Yeah, bad guys are bad guys.
When Parker asks the fence to do them a favor, and he says, why? And she says, because I'm Parker.
Why should I do this?
Parce que je m'appelle Parker. Now I consider it a personal favor.
The Parker?
That was the moment that I was like, ooh, I love that that name has still held on and is possibly even more more important in this world.
That's true. You're right. Wow, I didn't really think about that, because we've heard people say that they know of Hardison and that, of, and then, you know, of course, Riz. They've definitely heard of Elliot. Right. Like, they have these reputations for themselves, and you never really look at Parker and think that. You're like, oh, wait, no, she's Parker, too. They have been doing, they're not new to this. They're true to this.
Right. Right. I love that.
You like that?
I do.
I didn't make it up, but you can use it.
Any final thoughts?
Great episode. Love the flashback. There's so many elements this episode. If I had a final thought for it, I would say that I want that car.
I see. I want Stella to come back. I want her to continue. I mean, look,
like,
she's
like
now
come back in her life. Like come back. Like I with want the daughter. I mean, come back and then be together again. Like live happily
look,
ever
Stella
after.
Has her wife and daughter. She has
We've
Joe and
them,
the daughter.
Yeah.
They're good. I want Stella to help the team on something.
Okay.
You know me. Every time we're introduced to some new character
that
I
like, they have
like,
to come back.
They should come back and work with the team. And I think that she would be an amazing addition to the team. And I'm sure that
you're like a character agent. You know that you are a character agent. You will be like, I want them back, and you will figure out a plot, a story for them somehow from the stay in the game. I respect that.
They're going to need some help at some point, and she could easily play Sophie's mother.
You hear that, guys? Writers, guys, y'all would please like Stella to come back and join the team.
Thank you.
Anytime.
Those are just some of my predictions. Stick around, because we will have some of your predictions to check out soon. Who could have predicted that this episode would be a flashback? Well, maybe some of you, so let's check out the fan predictions. And now more from Elise Shannon. This is the episode where we meet the Jackal.
Joanna. That's all I have to say. You'll get it. Joanna was fantastic. And Gina, it was literally kind of a bottle episode in a way. But yeah, it was girl power. It was like three different generations of getting it done. And we all had different skills and different backgrounds and stuff like that. It was lots of fun.
Yeah.
One of my favorite scenes throughout the season is when Stella lifts the phone from your back pocket, and it's just so to Brianna. Like, Brianna's, I'm like, Brianna, like, you've been doing this for a little bit now. I guess she's a little lady and you wouldn't suspect her.
Wouldn't suspect. But also, you know, you're trying to do something nice. Like, the last thing, you're like bringing meals to old folks. Last thing you expect is for somebody to like get over on you when you're doing, but no good deed goes unpunished. So there's that.
I mean, but she takes the phone for a good reason.
Yes.
And then our team helps her. I absolutely love seeing Brianna in this episode, you know, being the good granddaughter.
Because
I feel like, you know, we're seeing all these different sides of her through the season. And this was really just an amazing moment.
Yeah, I think it softens her up a bit. Like, you know, my character goes through a lot of like, I'm not my brother, and, you know, ironing that out. And this is like a skill that I don't think anybody thought Brianna had in her back pocket, was to come in and like sort of kick around and be someone's little like stuffed animal, like little kid sort of deal. But yeah, I think it's rounding her out in a really brilliant way. And I'm excited to play it. I love playing stuff like that. Because I'm everybody's, like, little something on the show as well. You know what I mean? Like, I'm always the same age as somebody's daughter or, you know, stuff like that. So it just, it felt really appropriate.
Yeah.
That's up. So you are new to Leverage and, mm-hmm. new to this whole, first off, the fans of this show are amazing. Tell me about, like, the embrace that you got from them. Because I know they love your character. Like, we instantly loved your character saw her.
Yeah. I mean, it's been insane the way people have, like, come around me with open arms, and, you know, they're like, they're fans of this thing that's tried and true, and they're super protective over this show and super protective of who comes on this show and sort of like the vibe that they're getting. I mean, you can be cut in a second, you know, like deaded, but no, they've been super, super supportive of me. And, you know, me and Dean talked a little bit when we were building my character about how, like, we didn't want her to come in, like, too... She was going to come in hot, you know what I mean? Because she's, like, Gen Z and millennial and, like, you know, she has just a different set, especially with the relationship with her brother, right? I mean, you don't come to your brother like, oh, can I please... Like, you're like, put me here, man. Like, come on, dude. Like, I could do it. You could do it. We, you know, we come from the same place. Like, come on. But we wanted to, like, keep her sort of humble, keep her a little bit tacky. Like, you know, she doesn't have her style or her life figured out, even though she has strong opinions about other things. So I think we struck a good balance with her being, like, kind of crazy vulnerable and sort of humble and not together and yet still, like, super strong-headed and, you know, sure of her skills, just unsure of where she fits in this team. And that ironed itself out. I think the team accepted me with open arms. And so did the actors. I mean, the actors accepted me with the most open arms ever. And, yeah, just as we get comfortable with each other as a cast, I think that made it into the episode and the characters becoming comfortable with each other. And I think the fans see that. And they're willing to accept whoever, like, OT3 accepts and, you know, whoever Sophie Devereaux accepts. So I all of this is to say, like, flowers to the cast for accepting me, because I think that's where the work was done, and the fans are a reflection of that.
Yeah, the cast has, everyone has been gushing about you.
Oh.
And the fans are really accepting of you. You know, this character, like you said, she is new.
Yeah.
And we got to see how everyone feels. But we've gotten to really know and love her in such a way.
Sure.
Yeah. So what is it that you love about Brianna?
Oh, sheesh. I love all of her. I mean, that's sort of like, as an actor, you don't really have to love your character. You just have to, like, believe, you justify them and be like, this is a justified part. You can't judge them. But I love that Brianna, like, swings for the fences, and if she falls on her butt, she's going to fall on her butt, but she's going to get back up and pretend like it never happened. And I think that's something I wish I had a little more of in my life, you know. But I think we're similar in a lot of ways. Like, we play super cool before we know what we're doing. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to let you know that I don't know until you figure out that I don't know, in fact, what I'm doing. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I think I love just her bravado, and I love... just the audacity with which she comes into the world, being, you know, queer and a Black woman and a mixed Black woman, of course, but also just someone whose whole identity is sort of in limbo and yet still can take a solid foot forward and be like, yep, this is what I want. And then she gets told no. But, you know, whatever.
But at least she asks for what it is that she wants.
Right.
One thing that we pointed out on the show before is that genuinely the way that the writers and you all work together to tell Brianna's story in a way that we don't typically see in, like, coming out. Usually it's a big to-do. It's a huge thing that encompasses almost a whole character's personality sometimes. And the way it was just done, I think it was just absolutely, like, beautiful. It was perfect. And if you got it, you got it. And if you didn't, like, it wasn't for you.
Right.
That representation.
Yeah. I mean, if you lived any ounce of that life or any something that parallels that, like, had any sort of, I want to say, like, minority living in this that makes you want to hide or makes you feel other than whatever, I mean, you're going to pick up on it. Like, it is subtle, it is, but you're going to know what it really means to just sort of take that step and have transparency over your life. Like, yeah, that's great.
I mean, as Felicia says, I love the way that we had that scene and then the way that it connects with the Jackal storyline.
Oh, yeah.
Because Brianna picks up real early on. She's like, where's everyone?
Like, the assumptions here are not it, guys. Right. Let's reel it back.
Right. No, I mean, when I was on set and I was like, I was still kind of figuring, I had days off and I was like, what do I do on my days off? I'm gonna go to set. And, you know, you read something, but it's different seeing it. And that's the magic of, like, you know, TV and film, like, you're seeing it. So I see Gina and she's like in this flashback stuff and I'm like, oh, that's what she gets to do. I mean, I don't know if I, but she gets to be so gay right now. And I just like, oh my goodness, I wanted to be a bigger part of it and stuff like that. But Gina did fantastically. It's so, and so did Joanna. I mean, everybody, it was beautiful.
B-I-N-G-O. Do they even have bingo in the UK?
I think so.
Well, it doesn't matter if they do. We do have bingo right now. Check it out.
Season 1, episode 11, The Jackal Job. This episode has the gloat, and I love this gloat because it has our beloved Stella with Sophie doing a gloat.
You're right, this does feel good. And I pulled off a job with the Jackal.
We also have a food truck and let's go steal the world's greatest grifter.
We are here with Leverage Redemption co-creator and consulting producer Chris Downey. We are going to be talking about the Jackal Job.
This is an episode that gets to see not just Sophie with someone she admires and looks up to, but also I think it's one of the first times we've seen her in the flashback playing like a big part.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great point. We did two flashback episodes. I actually wrote both of them, the Van Gogh job and the D.B. Cooper job. Those were in seasons 4 and 5. And in the Van Gogh job, that was really centered on Parker and Hardison. And the D.B. Cooper job was very much Nate and Elliot centered. So it just the way those episodes broke. And I knew if we did another one, it would be great to focus it on Sophie. And I can't take credit for it at all. We have two wonderful new writers in the room this year, Tegan Wall and Matt Nakamura, who came up with this idea. And they loved the flashback episodes and very much wanted to do this and wanted to do one focused on Sophie. So it was just really fell into place.
In the Jackal Job, we get to really see Brianna kind of play a different role than we've gotten to see her be. You know, she's been the maker and the wisecracking, you know, kid. But we get to see a real, like, heart of her. And that's such a big part of this show is the heart.
Yes.
Tell me about blending heart and action.
Wow, that is the key, right? I mean, I always feel like heart is sort of the currency that you pay to get the action and, you know, the kind of heightened, you know, fun of the show. If without heart, you know, the show can seem silly, but with heart, you kind of buy into all the crazy machinations that the team does. You know, she just, you know, brought a wonderful perspective to this, because you learn a little bit about the fact that she had a mother who had Alzheimer's. That's a problem that I think any family in the world can relate to. And also, I'm sure people have been following the Free Britney movement. Yeah. The guardianship, you know, system in the United States is really flawed. And, you know, this episode allowed us to kind of shine a spotlight on something. It's not just pop stars who are victims of guardianship. There are people all over the country that find themselves in these positions. So, I thought those two things, the fact that it's a real issue and a real personal connection to it, I think all, inform the episode.
Yeah. Are there any topics or issues that you would love to see the show tackle that it hasn't yet?
Boy, that's interesting. I got to think about that. I mean, we spend a lot of time on the show talking about, what are the problems, particularly since the show's been off the air. I mean, I'm glad we tackled the opioid crisis in the first episode. I think healthcare is probably something that we would want to tackle. It's really a huge problem, and people are victimized, you know, by it. The lack of access to it, the way it's administered. So I think that's something going forward, if, you know, if we're lucky to do more episodes, it'll be something you'd look for.
Awesome. Yeah, no, because you're always bringing in real life things that are happening. We know we've seen human trafficking this season. We've seen so many things that are like very, very serious issues. But again, there's all these different components that make Leverage Redemption. Leverage Redemption is that there's heart. There's the storyline with our team. How do you put that on a board and figure out how to make all of that make sense in a way that you're doing your due diligence in talking about an issue and also that you're not leaving storyline behind while trying to do that?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, the first thing is always research. You know, before we tackle something, we're never afraid to get an expert on the phone to ask them about the issue and what the problems are. So we really try and get that part of it right. Then it's kind of a matter of looking at the cast and seeing, well, who would be impacted by this, or who might have something in their background that would you know make this really resonate with them. So the perfect example is the Jackal job, right? Where we could have looked at anybody who might have a perspective on this, but you know it really worked out wonderfully that Brianna had a grandmother that kind of explained how she ended up as Harrison's foster sister, and that she had a perspective. So, you know, those are the two things I think we try and look at, and then, you know, making sure that the client is someone that you really connect with emotionally. The more sympathetic the audience is to the client, I think the better an episode works.
What are the chances of seeing Stella again and her and Archie teaming up?
Wow, that would be wonderful. I don't know. I've never even thought of that, but that's a great idea.
Thank you.
Oh, we have lots of ideas if you'd like to talk about it after. We have a ton, actually, ton.
Almost all of them are bring this person back.
Well, because I think you want that as a fan, because we always see so much camaraderie, and in us doing this show, learning that it's what you see on screen is really what it's like behind the scenes too. And that's has to be the secret sauce to what makes this show is that, there's authenticity that is from creation and conception to what you see on the screen there. So.
Yeah, no, thank you. That's something that we really, do our due diligence on. You know, regarding bringing people back, you know, we're all for it. I mean, I think the one thing...
We're here for the ships, man. Hey, bring them on in. Load them on up to the dock. That's what we're here for.
we're all about, like, expanding the universe and you know, so I think that's something to hopefully look forward to going forward.
Let's see what we missed with Kate's Easter Egg Corner.
Cheerio.
The Jackal Job was directed by our king of flashback episodes, Mark Roskin, who also directed the D.B. Cooper Job in the original series. Also, Stella's daughter is played by Gina Bellman's real daughter, Romy. We named the Jackal after the character of the Jackal in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, who is the world's best con woman. It was just a reference to a wonderful movie. Mm-hmm. In terms of Joanna Cassidy, we envisioned the character as somebody who is so smart and so elegant, and none of that was missing from the character in her older age. It's just she had to work with the limitations within her her progressive disease. Mm. But she also has life in her. And it was a lot of fun to watch. It was a lot of fun to listen to her take the character and just make it her own.
We're keeping the groovy times rolling with more from Beth Riesgraf, better known as Parker.
I think it's so interesting. We talked about this before we got the interview started.
with being talent in front of the camera and then moving around to different parts of production, and for you directing, I don't want to say which do you prefer, because I feel like a creative person probably wouldn't really have a preference because you get to create. But what aspects are different from when you are getting to be in front of the camera versus when you're directing, like your approach?
You just don't get any time off when you're behind the scenes. There's no time off. And so as an actor, you get to go back to your chair and kind of have a minute and maybe go back to your trailer. This show, I know I'm like a broken record, but it is fast. This show is very fast. And the biggest thing I hear from guest stars coming in is like, this show is so fast. Like, it just goes, goes, goes. And I'm like, yeah, it's it's a sprint and a marathon, right? But it's like, I would say, because I would wrap set, and in prep, as you have all these meetings with all the departments and everybody, and you're Zooming like crazy. I was doing those on my lunch breaks. And then when I would wrap, I'd go to the production office and work with my AD, who had been working her butt off all day to figure out how people can get me questions without it slowing them down. If I'm on set, not interrupting me too much. And it just becomes a thing where you're like, oh, I have 5 minutes. I'm going to pop in this set on the stage, which we did. Like, the food truck became my office. And I had hair and makeup meetings, and I was having, all the meetings I would be having during the day, I was having at 10 o'clock at night with the crew, because that's when we could get together. And the train one was especially brutal, just because there were so many unknowns, and it was trying to build something before something was actually built, if that makes sense. So it was a lot of like, okay, if this is true, then that's true. And that means we could say this and make that decision.
Like, constant troubleshooting and figuring out how to maneuver
and logistics turn things around. Yeah, and stunts and like.
And handle people.
And handle people, exactly. And so I really thrive on that type of thing. Like, I love it. I don't want to choose. I want to do it all. I want to continue acting. It's funny. I don't know who said this. I was listening to some other podcast, and they were like, not as good as this one. Just don't worry.
Obviously.
Don't worry.
And definitely not as distinctive.
I know. This is, but I'm just saying, somebody mentioned it on another one of those things where they were like, everybody wants to put you in a box. They want you to be this so they can understand it, and then they'll put you in that type of show. Mm-hmm. And it is kind of a struggle. So you're like, No, I don't fit in your box. I actually have been a photographer since I was in high school, and then I've always wanted to be a filmmaker, and that's what I do. Like, I've made shorts before this, but yes, this was my first time doing this, and I want to keep acting, and I want to keep directing, and it's great to have those options and to say hard work pays off. And, it wasn't an overnight thing for me, and it took a lot of years of shadowing and begging to come along on scouts and sitting on that production meeting and talking to everyone and doing these funny little shorts where I'm gluing feathers on costumes and also bringing burritos for the crew so they can eat and holding the boom. And, so it all leads up to this moment. And I think that go, go, go nature of it wears you down. It's really hard, but it's so exciting and it's so fun. And I love it.
And I always tell people, it's like, it's your vision that will keep you going when all the other stuff in your sight seems crazy. It's like, no, I want to do this. But like you said, you're like, I'm making burritos. I'm holding boom mics. I don't know. Maybe you're holding somebody's baby. I don't know what you're doing. But you did whatever you had to do to get where you had to go. So even by sight, like, this, how is this helping me? How can I get to where I have to go? Like,
yeah.
But in vision, it's like, no, I have to do these things. I have to learn these things so that when I get into the position to be a director, I know how to be the best director I can be.
Absolutely. And I think all those times of struggle and scrapping together little projects with your friends pay off, because you actually understand the hustle of it in a different way. And nothing's been handed to you, right? So it's getting in there, appreciating that everyone has a time constraint and everyone's time is valuable. And having people who say yes and is really important. And you come with a crazy idea and they want to do it. Like, in The Bucket Job, there was the scene where Sophie's coming out and Brianna's firing the squibs. It's like a long walk and talk. And if I didn't have a crew that knew me and knew, like, okay, she's got this crazy idea and wants to go from here all the way down here and then here and make it feel like one whole shot, what? And there was kind of like, logistically, how are we going to do this? And then I had, my camera, Gary and Dave, our DP, being like, maybe we could get a forklift and then a wheelbarrow and then maybe we could do this, but like, we ended up finding a way to do it that made sense. But that's because they said yes. If you you get in there and you pitch it with enthusiasm, and sometimes you're going to get the no way, we can't do that. And that happened all the time, right? So then it's like, okay, but what can we do? And how do we move from there? And that's the kind of stuff I love. I love creating a moment to moment like that, and it can also drive you crazy.
It seems like you guys really do that well on this show. Like, trust what creatively you bring to the table, okay? What like, you guys give a lot of energy and back and forth with one another. It's not just, we're going to stick to everything in this script. We're going to stick to everything that was written. We're going to stick to boom, 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 boom. It's not so rigid. Definitely a room full of creatives.
Yeah, and it goes back to that creative process, you know, and it's having the side of you that's understanding that there's a ticking clock and you only have so much time. So even, you know, listening to amazing directors talk about their process, I kind of hear the same thing over and over, where it's like, have a plan, but be willing to pivot and throw it out the door if it doesn't work in the moment, because so much can be found in that beautiful moment of improvisation, or, you know, something goes wrong and you end up finding an even better idea. And that I experienced that on both episodes in different ways. And you learn so much each time you do it, you know. And the beauty of our show is everything is a new situation. Each episode is a new situation. So you're always in it for this game and this ride, and it's going to be something new each time, which is really exciting.
Now we're going to check out some fan questions from you groovy fans.
We're here with the one and only Christian Kane, who's going to answer some of your questions that you sent in for us. Christian, you ready?
Let's give it a shot.
Hi, this is Melissa from New Jersey, and my question is for Christian Kane. I just wanted to know, is there anyone special in your life, or does a girl have a chance?
Christian Kane is a lot like Elliot Spencer. He keeps everything a little bit close to the vest when it comes to stuff like that. Wow, that kind of question.
Are you blushing?
Yeah,
you're so blushing right now.
you never know at this point, you know. That's I am blushing a little bit. It's just that was a very nice thing for someone to ask, man. That's very kind. Listen.
I mean, you're putting yourself you cook, you're growing vegetables. You're like, you know, you're kind of putting out like your resume. It's like decent,
right.
You know?
Right.
It's pretty good. You seem to be steadily employed, you know?
At this moment, I am seeing someone.
All right.
Nice. So yeah. But, I mean, I feel bad. I don't want to just say something like that because, you know, listen, who knows?
But that's ebbs and flows of life, and that happens and, on screen, like we saw with Maria, and in our real lives. It's just something that happens,
yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, that's just I really honestly thought I was going to be answering something about a goddamn artifact or something. I didn't
catch you off guard a little bit.
All
okay,
right.
Though, there
all right,
more
let's
questions.
Do another one.
Yeah,
okay.
There's more
okay.
questions.
That was very kind of her, though.
Mr. Kane, my name is Mary Flower Stell, and I am proud to be a Kaniac. With that said, I wanted to ask you, as Mr. Kane, what your favorite food and favorite drink would be. And as Elliot Spencer, what are your favorite food and drink? Thank you.
Wow, that's a great question. You know, as Christian Kane, I think you can wrap anything up in a tortilla. I love burritos. I really love burritos, especially kind of when you pan fry them or like, you know, put them in the press and stuff like that. I've been a really big fan for about the last 20 years because I didn't grow up with California Mexican. And people that don't know what that is, Mexican food's always been my favorite. But when you found a California Mexican, it was like fresh avocado and fresh, you know, we used pickled jalapenos back home. We never used fresh jalapenos. My mama did. But, you know, and it's just it's fresher food, and it's California Mexican, and I really, really love that. And then my favorite drink would have to be, I mean, I just really love a great Bloody Mary. You know, I used to make them when I was a bartender when I was younger. And the secret to a really good Bloody Mary, a restaurant I used to work at closed down. It was their secret thing. But you have to shake them. People don't realize you have to shake them. Otherwise, you're sticking a straw down at the bottom of, like, you know, steak sauce. But you got to splash of white wine and a splash of orange juice. And I did that on my cooking show, Kane's Kitchen. I showed everybody how to do that. Splash of white wine, splash of orange juice, horseradish. If you can use real, use real. But if not, you know, make sure you got a good horseradish. And and you shake it because you want it to be cold, and it's so refreshing, and it can start the meal off, or it can finish up a long night in the morning. That's Christian Kane's favorite drink. Elliot Spencer's favorite food, I think, would probably be a nice filet mignon. I think he's a, steak guy. I really honestly do think he's a really good. I think he's very particular about where the meat come from. I think he's an Argentine steak guy. I think it has to be, you know, raised close to Salto, where when my friend Robert Duvall has a ranch out there and raises his own cattle. It's just they feed them right off the ground. They feed so it's a grass fed. I think it's an Argentine grass fed steak. Would be his, and then I think the thing with Elliot is he's just a beer guy. He likes to have a beer at the end of the day, and I think he's always done that. When times get tough, he'll go to the whiskey, but he's just a beer guy, man. Yeah, he can't really ever lose his sense of being because he never knows when he's going to have to fight. So it's not good for him to get tanked.
Very true, and he doesn't.
But
get
he
as,
does.
Yeah, but doesn't get as well. He's not a lightweight like Hardison.
Right,
so
that's right.
It's not so bad. It's funny you brought burritos because your breakfast burrito. Like, Beth told us about it, so, like, yeah, I know man. Burritos are, like, your thing.
Kane's Burrito every morning. Noah started on it. Beth started on it. Gina's.
It's sorry, a proper
really
regimen
hot, though,
for the show.
It's got fresh jalapenos in it. Sometimes Serrano. You never know what day it is.
They have hot sauce on it, too?
There is some hot sauce on it. I don't know if they do that with them. They probably told it to calm it down, but, yeah. Yeah. Back in, I used to get in trouble back on Leverage and the Librarians the first time around because I would put this green hot sauce. It's my favorite. El Yucatan or something like that, and then makeup would just pour off of me in the morning because I'd be sweating so much. But I enjoy it. Yeah, that's awesome. Good question.
We know that Joe is an amazing painter, so let's see how you did with this fan art. The official Leverage Redemption After Show is part of the Electric Surge Network on Electric Now. We recommend checking out some of our other original content like Inglourious Trekspurts, the 430 movie, and Best Movies Never Made. Finally, a very special thank you to Bill Ritter, Patrick Meany, and everyone at Electric Surge Network, our producers Natalie Michelli, and of course Dean Devlin, without whom this show would not be possible. That's it for this episode of the official Leverage Redemption After Show, a very distinctive podcast. We had a lot of fun today.
I had the most fun ever because I got to use my British accent. Hold on. Wait, I think the telly is ringing for me. It must be Gina to tell me to cut it out.
Probably. Thank you so much to everyone who joined us on the show. Thank you to the fans for submitting your questions, predictions, and fan art. We love seeing what you create.
Be sure to follow us on After Leverage on Instagram and Twitter to find out more of what we're doing. And until next time, I'm Felicia Michelle.
I'm Yael Teagle.
And this has been
a very distinctive podcast.